Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're going to be talking about a reaction from Elon Musk to a bearish point of view on Tesla stock from Gordon Johnson. We've also got a bit of news from an automotive investor conference, a little bit more news on China, Tesla Energy, Missy Cummings, who remember was appointed to NHTSA, and Herbert Diess. And we are still in the middle of December 9th, so we'll see if anything else happens. Obviously, nothing big has happened yet today. We did have that teaser from Tesla China yesterday for something that may come in US time zone later tonight. So we'll probably have to keep an eye out for that after the episode is published, but so far, nothing major for 12.9. I don't know if a lack of something there had anything to do with Tesla stock today, but tougher day overall, Tesla finishing down 6.1% to $1,003.80. Tougher day overall in the markets though, and for growth stocks in particular, the NASDAQ down 1.7% today, and that was in comparison to the Dow being flat. So generally speaking, when you see the NASDAQ down by quite a bit, the Dow not really following that, indicates a bit of a rotation from growth into value. All right, first up here, we're going to talk about kind of a funny response from Elon to a CNBC video that they tweeted out from Gordon Johnson appearing on CNBC this morning, and we're not going to watch the video, but the text of the tweet here captures what I think Elon is reacting to. And they're quoting Gordon Johnson, who said, quote, "With respect to next year, I think Tesla has big problems. Their CFO said their gross margins are going to come down. With no new cars coming for Tesla, not only do you have a gross margin risk, but you have a volume risk," end quote. That argument may sound familiar from last year for those of you that did watch the Gordon Johnson interview on Tesla Daily, so nothing really new there. And Elon simply replying to this tweet with two laughing crying emojis. So I guess just to kind of clarify and then rebut the point, when Gordon says no new cars coming, he means no new models. And I presume when he says volume risk, he's probably talking versus analyst consensus rather than year over year, but I don't think we really need to spend much time on that, as I assume most listeners believe that the demand is there based on the long wait times that Tesla has right now. So it's more of a production thing. And obviously production looks set to ramp up pretty significantly next year. So the other point there is gross margins. Gordon Johnson saying that Zach Kirkhorn said that gross margins are going to come down. So I just thought it was worth a second to refresh on what Zach actually said on the Q3 call. That was, quote, "The launch of Austin and Berlin will have ramp inefficiencies there for some period of time until we get those factories up and running. And so that's likely to put some downward pressure on our margins as those factories ramp," end quote. So that's definitely a valid consideration. Zach also noted just increasing costs in the supply chain and things like that. But Tesla will have higher volume and price increases, as well as more mixed in Model S and X, kind of offsetting some of those things. So while I do think it's likely that gross margin does take a temporary hit there, I also don't think it's guaranteed, and I also don't think that's necessarily what Zach is saying here. Downward pressure from these ramps is not the same thing as saying that gross margin will be down because of these ramps. It just means that these ramps are going to have lower gross margins than the gross margin that Tesla is at right now, and therefore be a downward force. But Tesla can have upward forces that could offset that downward force. I already gave a couple examples of that. Price increases, increased volume. But then you've also got kind of wild cards like the possibility of deferred revenue recognition from the FSD beta wider releases. And if and when Tesla does start recognizing that deferred revenue, every car they sell with FSD is going to be able to show a better margin than what it would have in the past because more is going to be recognized upfront rather than deferred. So it is a little bit semantical, but I think it's important to understand what Zach truly is saying there and what he's not necessarily saying, even though, yes, of course, margins could end up being down temporarily from these ramps. Of course, if that is the case, who really cares? We know that that is a temporary period of time. And even if gross margins are down, Zach also said, quote, "And I think the net of all this is hopefully that we continue to make progress on operating margin over the next 4 or 5 quarters," end quote. So even if Tesla's gross margins do take a bit of a hit, Tesla's operating leverage is just continuing and continuing to be stronger and stronger. That's going to significantly help reduce the bottom line impact to any gross margin headwind. Remember, this year, we're going to have a lot less Elon Musk compensation hitting that final number than what we did last year. So there are a ton of tailwinds here. And even if earnings were down sequentially, quarter over quarter, they're still going to be up to last year, at least for the next 2 quarters. And that's going to lead to continued price to earnings compression. A month from now, if Tesla stays at $1,000 per share, trailing price to earnings, which is what's going to show up on Google Finance, Yahoo Finance, whatever, that's going to be below 250x. And another 3 months after that, it's probably going to be below 200. Again, that's if the share price were to remain flat. And at that point, we should be pretty well into the ramps for Berlin and Texas. And the further we go in those ramps, the more uncertainty is removed, the more risk is removed. And all else being equal, removing risk is going to be good for a stock. So I thought it was a good opportunity for that little refresher there. And then just back to Elon even responding to this, it's probably also worth considering that Elon is laughing at these bearish arguments. If gross margin was about to tank or something like that, probably less likely that Elon would be reacting in that way, but I also wouldn't take that too far because, you know, who knows with Elon. All right, next up here, and this is still relevant to what we were just discussing, Tesla's investor relations team has apparently been meeting with buy-side investors as a part of the Deutsche Bank Automotive Conference. Looks like Gary Black had one of those meetings. He says, quote, "We met with Tesla management yesterday. Thoughts? Number one, Austin and Berlin likely to open with limited production before year end. Two, Austin and Berlin year one volumes and gross margin percent should be similar to Shanghai year one. And three, we have confidence fiscal year 2022 deliveries will approximately be 1.5 million, street at 1.27 million, battery capacity permitting," end quote. There are a couple more, but let's talk about these first. So on that first point, great to see reiteration of Austin and Berlin likely to open this year. I wouldn't put a whole lot of weight in that though. Tesla's IR team may just be reiterating the most recent communication. Kind of tough to say without hearing exactly what that conversation was. So I actually think that second point is more interesting about year one volume and gross margin. Shanghai did start production late in 2019, so technically the first four quarters volume was about 88,000, but that first full year, 2020, that was 154,000 vehicles. So it sounds like Tesla may be expecting 300,000 across Berlin and Austin. Then, of course, we've got Fremont. Let's just say that's 500,000. It seems like the capacity is a little bit more, but just to be conservative. And then Shanghai right now definitely is running at least, you know, 55,000 or so per month. So that's about 660,000 annualized. Summing up those four then puts you at 1,460,000 for 2021. And that's really no progress from Shanghai, which I think is unlikely and still quite a bit below what Tesla states the Fremont capacity as being. It's a little bit higher than the current run rate at Fremont, but even stepping that back down, that only takes about 60,000 vehicles out. So you'd still be at 1.4 million. Now, obviously, that assumes that they can hit their supposed targets here for Berlin and Austin, but that's another really clear path to greater than 50% growth year over year if Tesla does come in somewhere around 900,000 for 2021. As for the gross margin piece of that, it's a little bit trickier to isolate in on than volume, but for both volume and gross margin, it's worth considering that 2020 was a weird year with COVID shutdowns. I'm not going to assume that Tesla means a higher volume because of that, but I would imagine they're kind of thinking about gross margin with that factored out. Anyway, those quarterly margin numbers are significantly off because of that. However, Tesla in the Q1 2020 report, so really the first quarter of any real production for Giga Shanghai, Tesla said that, quote, "gross margin at Giga Shanghai approaching level of US-made Model 3," end quote. That's pretty amazing and clearly wasn't well enough appreciated at the time, even though we talked a lot about it. And even in hindsight, I still think that's not well enough appreciated. But if Tesla has similar expectations for Berlin and Austin, that's great news. The other couple of points that Gary recaps, he says, Cybertruck on track for late 2022 start of production and deliveries, and capacity expansion required will be via Shanghai, Austin, Berlin expansions first, plus new locations. So nothing really new there, and kind of the same thing on the Cybertruck. That could just be a reiteration of the most recent guidance, so I'm not really putting too much weight in that either. All right, next up, I didn't really think I would have to cover this because it's kind of ridiculous, but seems to be getting a lot of attention. And I guess NHTSA is looking at it now. So a couple days ago, New York Times posted an article about how some of the games Tesla offers on the touchscreen could be in use while the vehicle is being driven. And then yesterday, the New York Times quotes NHTSA as saying, "We are aware of driver concerns and are discussing the feature with the manufacturer." So I'll be brief on this. I don't think it matters at all. Obviously, if NHTSA requires Tesla to change something, Tesla can do that very easily. And for anyone that's driven FSD Beta 10.5 or 10.6, the eye tracking is now very intense. It's hard enough to even change your media. I can't imagine someone having much success trying to play a game. Why does Tesla even allow this in the first place? Well, because sometimes maybe the passenger would like to play a game as the vehicle's being driven. Sure, Tesla could probably do more with the cabin camera or seat weight sensor to ensure that there is a passenger, but again, obviously something that Tesla is capable of doing, so NHTSA, Tesla, they'll figure it out. Not worried about that. And the whole thing is stupid because people can use their phones. So a quick suggestion for the media here, once this whole Tesla lets you play games on the screen while you're driving has run its course, well, just use those same articles, lower your operating costs here, do a find and replace of Tesla with Apple or Samsung, because guess what, you can play games on those while you're driving too, and you don't need to be in a Tesla. All right, next up here, we've got a little bit more detail on those November China numbers published by the China Passenger Car Association. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but they have now posted bi-model retail sales, so domestic sales in China, and I thought it was worth looking at the SUV sales. We can see the Model Y appear on the best-selling list year-to-date, so this is January through November, and the Model Y, despite it ramping up and being in the first year of its production there in China, is already 13th on the most popular SUV list in China out of all SUVs, not just battery electric. So I think that's a really, really good slot to hold. And I think that comes through even more if we look at the high-end SUV segment that they classify. And in that category, the Model Y is second year-to-date, just 10,000 vehicles below the BMW X3. We'll see how December goes. Maybe Tesla's got a shot at taking that this year, but if not, then, you know, certainly would expect that for 2022. Next up, we've got more news on Tesla Energy battery projects in Australia. This is not the Victoria Big Battery project that we talked about yesterday. This one is for Queensland. Tesla working with GenX there on a 100 megawatt hour battery project. And it sounds like they're using sort of a unique business model on this project. And I'm not entirely clear on the details. The article doesn't share a whole lot here from A New Economy, but they say that the deal acts as a sort of takeoff deal for the battery, providing a minimum amount of contracted revenue to GenX, presumably from the energy that Tesla would end up selling from the battery, so that GenX can lock in financing. Quote, the decision to use Tesla Megapacks was announced in October, and GenX says the new 8-year revenue sharing deal will provide a guaranteed fixed amount and also the possibility of sharing in revenue upside from significant pricing events in wholesale electricity and FCAS markets. End quote. So I'm not sure it'd be helpful to have the specifics here, but I guess my take on it is that Tesla is sort of providing a revenue guarantee to GenX for this project. So hey, GenX, you'll get X million dollars each quarter, and anything above that Tesla would keep, although potentially share at least a portion of the excess above that guarantee with GenX. That's my take on it. I don't know if that's correct, but with that revenue guarantee, then GenX can go out and get the financing that they need. And it's kind of an interesting structure that could allow for some cash flow for Tesla and also more capital to flow into projects like this. All right, last couple of things for today. First up is some attention on Missy Cummings. It's been a while since we talked about her since her appointment to NHTSA. Bloomberg recapturing some of that attention today with a, well, very attention-grabbing headline. Quote, Tesla autopilot critic who took U.S. job out as trial witness. So she was set as an expert witness in a Tesla crash case allegedly involving autopilot. So it's like, oh my gosh, why is she out of this case? But the reason she's out of the case is because of the position with NHTSA. So really nothing too interesting there. She'll just be replaced by a different expert witness. Lastly, then, it looks like we do finally have some closure on the ongoing uncertainty with Volkswagen and Herbert Diess. Volkswagen making a series of announcements today, one of which was that Diess will continue as the board of management member with responsibility for the Volume brand group. However, it does look like he continues to cede at least a bit of authority. Volkswagen also says that Rolf Brandstätter, who remember took over the Volkswagen brand CEO position from Diess last year, he will assume the responsibility for the new so-called Volkswagen passenger cars division as of January 1st and the China division as of August 1st next year. It's not yet exactly clear to me what that Volkswagen passenger cars division is comprised of, so I'll have to try to figure that out, but Diess does seem to be in relatively good spirits. Volkswagen shared out a video today of him talking about some of these changes. He seems happy. He was making some jokes. Volkswagen quotes him as saying, I feel significantly strengthened by the appointments and the organization, and says Herbert Diess cements his will to shape new auto. Now, obviously, we can't be sure if that is authentic or more spin, but Reuters also reports Diess as saying, quote, I cannot complain about a lack of responsibilities. I continue to feel fully responsible for the company, end quote. So it doesn't seem to be quite as aggressive of a power shift as some of those earlier rumors may have suggested, but kind of tough to tell and definitely some changes here, so we'll see how it plays out. But that will wrap it up for today. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow doing a live stream for the Friday, December 10th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.